Hi, I'm Francesca, a registered nutritional therapist, and welcome to the Empowered Perimenopause podcast. This is a space for down-to-earth, honest conversations about what's really going on in your body in your 40s and how to support yourself through it. If you're feeling a bit out of sync, overwhelmed, or just not quite like yourself, you're in the right place. So let's get into today's episode. Hi, and welcome back to another episode of the podcast with me, your host, Francesca. Today's episode was inspired by a question from someone in my community, and they asked, what do you do when you're trying everything, but your sleep is still disturbed? And as soon as I read that question, I thought, this is a really important conversation to have. So I'm really glad that this was asked, because a lot of women that I speak to, they're doing all the right things. They're taking the magnesium at night. They're avoiding caffeine later in the day. They're trying meditation, they're going to bed a bit earlier, they're reading a book instead of scrolling on their phone. They're doing all the things that they're told should help. Maybe you've listened to my podcast episodes in the past and you're trying some of the things that I mentioned, which include all of these things. But you're still lying awake at 2 a.m., 3 a.m., or waking multiple times during the night. Maybe you're waking up at 4 a.m. and that's it for the day. You can't get back to sleep at all. And then by the time you eventually decide to get out of bed because you know you can't get back to sleep, you're just exhausted because you're starting the day so early. Or you're feeling completely exhausted when you wake up in the morning, despite spending 8 hours in bed or, you know, the right amount of hours that you feel you would need. So if that's you, I firstly want you to know that your sleep struggles don't necessarily mean that you're doing anything wrong. Of course, if somebody isn't doing or hasn't tried any of the things, for example, that we just mentioned, like adding in magnesium glycinate at night can be really helpful for people who aren't already doing that. And those few, you know, the set of habits that are really, really great, the wind down routine, avoiding bright lights, things like that. If a person isn't doing those things and they start to do one or some of those things, they can find that that really starts to improve their sleep. And for some, it's a game changer. For me, it was. But if you're doing these things and you're just, you know, you feel that you're doing the right things, this person specifically was saying, I'm managing my stress. I'm doing all these things to manage my stress, but my sleep is still really bad. So I just want you to know that it doesn't mean you're doing anything wrong. And that's what I want to explore in today's episode, because sleep problems in perimenopause are usually much more complex than simply being stressed or having poor sleep habits. Like I say, improving sleep habits do help. Managing stress will help, but it's not the full picture. I recently came across some really interesting research, actually, that validates why what so many women tell me and what we hear about from so many women online. So a menopause researcher in the US called Andrea Donsky and her team at Morphus surveyed over 5,000 women in 2024 about their experiences of perimenopause and menopause. And they identified over 103, so way more than that, that's just what they identified, over 103 symptoms associated with perimenopause and menopause. Not 10, not 20, but over 100. Now, we already know there are loads and loads of different symptoms associated. I'll do a separate episode on some of the weird and wacky unexpected symptoms, but you know, over 103, and we're probably still counting. That is, you know, that just shows the huge impact of this phase. But what I found most interesting was that many of the most common symptoms, they weren't physical, they were cognitive and emotional. So things like brain fog, anxiety, changes to mood, difficulty concentrating and focusing, fatigue, and sleep disturbances. Hot flushes weren't even among the 10 most commonly reported symptoms. And I think this explains why so many women will say, I just don't feel like myself anymore. I can't quite explain what's wrong. I just know that it feels like everything is off or something is really off. Because, you know, usually it isn't just one clear symptom. It's a lot of things happening at once. And sleep is frequently one piece of that bigger puzzle. And if you can imagine, we start to experience things like brain fog, anxiety, mood changes, you know, difficulty concentrating. that is going to have, in a roundabout way, a knock-on impact to your sleep. And then sleep disturbances will have, in a roundabout way, a knock-on impact to all of those things. So it can become this kind of vicious cycle. But yeah, hopefully from this episode, you'll walk away feeling empowered and feeling like there's just one or two things that you can change or try that will help you. So first of all, I want to say that one of the biggest misconceptions about perimenopause is that it's purely a reproductive, you know, hormonal ovarian issue. But perimenopause isn't just happening in your ovaries. Now, hormonal change is happening. That is what characterizes perimenopause. The new erratic nature of estrogen, its eventual decline in the later stages of perimenopause. And then obviously once we reach menopause itself and live postmenopause, we're no longer making estrogen and progesterone from our ovaries. So of course, that's what characterizes these phases, perimenopause and menopause. But the impact of that is happening everywhere. It's happening in your brain as well. Your brain relies heavily on hormones like estrogen and progesterone. Progesterone has a calming effect on the nervous system. It supports GABA, which is one of our main calming brain chemicals, neurotransmitters, and that works in the brain to calm anxiety and calm the brain down. And as progesterone gradually declines, which is the first of the two hormones that starts to decline, this is happening from anywhere from late 30s, early 40s, or even mid to late 30s. So as progesterone starts its gradual decline, a lot of women start to notice that they feel less resilient. So this is usually one of the first symptoms in the early stages of perimenopause, you know, late 30s, early 40s, 41, 42. This is definitely my experience as well, is that the first signs is that we start to feel less resilient. We can't quite put our finger on anything specific, but we're just feeling that little bit more anxious, more easily overwhelmed, just more sensitive to stress. And at the same time, that fluctuating nature of estrogen can start to affect our neurotransmitters that are involved in mood, motivation, emotional regulation, and sleep. So serotonin, melatonin, for example. So when women tell me, I've suddenly become anxious, everything feels more stressful, my sleep has fallen apart, it's usually not because they're doing life wrong. There could be things, of course, that could be tweaked to help the situation. But it's not that they're doing things wrong. It's because their brain and their nervous system are responding differently during this transition. They're responding to this new change in hormones and how that affects the brain. And the nervous system then has to kind of, respond and adapt to that. And in that phase, that perimenopause phase of adaptation to this new way our hormones are behaving and the new levels, it creates this upheaval. And the brain is one of the biggest, you know, one of the big things that does get impacted, and therefore sleep too. So I also want to talk about something that I don't think we talk about enough, the difference between being tired and being rested. So a lot of women are completely exhausted. I know I resonate with this so many days of the week, just feeling absolutely, the way I describe it, is wrecked, drained, just, you know, and I'm thinking this is not equal, can't think of the word, this doesn't seem like it's my lifestyle and the things I do on a day-to-day basis shouldn't leave me feeling wrecked, but that's just how I feel so often. So they're exhausted, but they're not actually relaxed. They're tired, but they're also wired. So we're feeling tired, but when we then try to rest, we can be feeling quite wired, that, you know, we're just not able to rest. And that can be the same when we go to bed. We feel absolutely wrecked, absolutely exhausted, but we get into bed and our mind is just racing. We're too wired to actually be able to fall asleep into a nice, deep, restorative sleep where we don't wake up. But their body's desperate for rest, but their nervous system is just still on high alert. So maybe you're exhausted all day long. You could easily kind of fall asleep on the sofa at 3 p.m. But yet, and this is definitely how I feel during the day, just absolutely exhausted around 3 o'clock. I could just lie down wherever I am and just have a little nap. But then when bedtime arrives, your brain suddenly becomes wide awake. Or maybe you feel that you fall asleep perfectly well, but then you wake up at 2 o'clock and your mind is racing and you just can't get back to sleep. Now, some people will wake up around 2 o'clock or whatever time because they genuinely need a wee. This is me. I can sometimes overdo my herbal nighttime teas. And the evenings that I do that, I'll always be woken up about 2 o'clock with my bladder just saying, you need to go to the toilet. And I'll have a wee, get straight back into bed and go straight back to sleep. And I kind of don't really remember it. I just have a vague memory of it in the morning. And that's perfectly fine. You know, that happens. It's when we're waking up at these times and our mind is racing and we just cannot get back to sleep, or it takes too long. You know, it takes over sort of 20 minutes to get ourselves back to sleep. That's usually a sign that the nervous system is struggling to switch fully into rest and repair mode at night. Your body's tired, but the brain doesn't yet feel safe enough to completely switch off and get you into this restorative, deep sleep. So let's talk about some of the reasons that sleep can remain disrupted, even when you're doing many of the right things, even when you feel, I've made these changes, I'm taking this thing, I'm taking this magnesium glycinate, and I'm managing my stress a lot better than I used to, but I'm just not able, you know, my sleep is just still poor. So one possibility could be blood sugar regulation. This is really common one. So if blood sugar drops too low during the night, it could be 1 o'clock, could be two, could be three, your body then releases stress hormones. It releases cortisol to help bring your blood sugar back up again, because it has this really, very clever mechanism to, you know, for our survival. So if the body senses, the brain senses that our blood sugar has dropped too low, then there's a mechanism that kicks in to help bring that blood sugar level back up again, to help release some glucose and then get that back into the bloodstream and allow your blood sugar levels to level out again. But those stress hormones that do that wake you up. Usually they can wake you up. So really important that we're looking to manage blood sugar levels from the moment we wake up in the morning throughout the day. And that can help to keep our levels stable throughout the night and prevent us from waking up. We'll talk more about that in a moment. Another possibility is cortisol dysregulation. So not necessarily high cortisol. A lot of people are talking about my cortisol must be really high, it must be through the roof. That's not necessarily the case. We wouldn't know that unless we did a 4-point saliva test for cortisol. So we would see at the different 4 points within a 24-hour cycle where your cortisol levels are. So this, you know, we could have overall low levels, overall high levels, overall normal levels, but it's about the regulation of it. It's what it's doing at times of the day when it should be low versus high. You know, is it high when it should be low? Is it low when it should be high? But actually overall your levels are still normal. It's all about the pattern. That's the most important thing. Just cortisol being released essentially at the wrong times and not being released when it should. So for example, cortisol is supposed to be lowest at night to help us to fall asleep and then stay asleep. So the lower where cortisol is low at night, which is how it should be, that allows melatonin, your sleep hormone, to kick in instead, to be produced instead. And that then helps us to have this deep restorative sleep that lasts until the morning. If we make enough melatonin because we've got nice low levels of cortisol, then that's how that should be. But for some women, stress, hormone fluctuations, aka perimenopause, dips in blood sugar that we can control if we know what to do, or a combination of other factors can lead to cortisol being released during the evening, during the night, when we want it to be low. And then that creates this situation where we're waking up, we can be wide awake at 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. wondering why, you know, we're just suddenly staring at the ceiling, unable to fall asleep again. And another factor that often gets overlooked with the sleep issues, we talk about cortisol, we talk about progesterone, is actually estrogen itself. So we tend to focus on progesterone when we talk about sleep because progesterone has such a calming effect on the nervous system. But estrogen plays an important role in our ability to sleep and stay asleep as well. So one of the things that makes perimenopause so challenging is that estrogen doesn't simply just decline in a straight line. We don't just have estrogen and then it just starts going down. It fluctuates. It's on a roller coaster ride from, say, late 30s, early 40s, mid 40s, definitely. It's starting to fluctuate up and down like a roller coaster versus a more gentler ebb and flow or straight line decline. So it can be really high 1 week and then suddenly be dropped really low the next day, for the next week, and so on and so on throughout the whole, the many years that we're riding this perimenopause train. And those sudden drops in estrogen are felt by the brain. And in fact, the brain perceives these hormonal shifts as a stressor. It's stressed out by the hormonal fluctuations, and then that can trigger the release of cortisol and other stress hormones. And for some women, that can then contribute to waking up in the night, feeling more anxious, or waking with a racing mind, unable to fall back to sleep again. Estrogen also helps regulate body temperature through its effect on the hypothalamus, the part of the brain that acts as your body's thermostat, like your temperature control. So as estrogen gets more and more erratic, then that thermostat can become more sensitive. It's not able to control your body temperature as well anymore. And that can then contribute to night sweats, hot flashes, or simply just waking up because you feel too hot. You may not necessarily be in a full-on sweat, but you're aware that you're awake because you're hot and you have to adjust something to help yourself get back to sleep again. Estrogen is also involved in the production and regulation of several neurotransmitters, brain chemicals that influence sleep, mood, and emotional resilience, as I mentioned earlier, including serotonin. And then serotonin is one of the building block chemical that's used to make melatonin, your sleep hormone. So when estrogen levels get more erratic, then it starts to affect the entire sleep-wake system. So this is one reason why so many women tell me, I used to sleep like a log. That used to be me, my signature. And now I just wake up for no reason. And that can be really hard. You know, if you're someone who's just used to sleeping like a log, you can, as soon as your head hits the pillow and you've been known for it, and now suddenly you're the person that's struggling with sleep, it's really hard to deal with. And of course, the impact that has on how we feel day to day. Sometimes there's a reason. It's just happening at a hormonal and neurological level rather than because you've had caffeine too late in the day or forgotten your magnesium. You know, sometimes it is just, I can pinpoint what happens. And this happens to me because my sleep is generally very good. It wasn't. I went through a phase in my early 40s where I was really, really struggling with sleep, but I managed to put a few things in place and change a few things that helped me to get my sleep on track. So for the most part, I do sleep very well. But the nights, the few and far between nights that do happen, where I just keep waking up or I, you know, struggle to get back to sleep, there's usually a reason. I can pinpoint it. I can say, I don't drink coffee anyway, but I love good green teas and I usually only have them in the morning. But if I do have a green tea or a matcha, for example, really late in the day, that does affect my sleep. I'm very, very sensitive to caffeine. So I can usually pinpoint it, or maybe I've had even a kombucha because there's green tea in there. And I might have had one at 6 p.m. and not really thought about it. And then, I can't sleep. Or if I forget my magnesium, it doesn't, sometimes it affects my sleep. Sometimes it doesn't, but sometimes it does. Otherwise it can sometimes literally be the hormonal and neurological levels, rather than because we've done anything wrong that actual day. So progesterone is another important piece of the puzzle. As I mentioned, we tend to talk about progesterone a lot in terms of sleep because of that calming effect on the brain. But it is one of the earliest hormonal changes in perimenopause. This starts to happen, as I said, late 30s, early 40s, as we start to have more and more menstrual cycles where we either don't ovulate at all or we manage to ovulate, but we just produce less progesterone than we used to. And that is the natural feature of perimenopause. Getting more and more pronounced the further we move through it. And because progesterone supports GABA, one of your brain's main calming chemicals, that's one of the reasons a lot of women notice that they feel calmer, they sleep more deeply, and they cope better with stress after ovulation when progesterone is being produced. So as progesterone starts to decline, it's not unusual to experience lighter sleep, more night waking, increased anxiety, and a nervous system that just feels less resilient than it once did. And it might be that some months we sleep okay, in the sort of last 2 weeks of our cycle after we have hopefully ovulated, and other months that we don't, we have a bad 2 weeks or so, you know, of that luteal phase, the last 2 weeks of the cycle. And it could be that one month we did ovulate, the next month we don't, the next month we do, the next month we do, but we don't make enough progesterone. And so sometimes that's why I love tracking the menstrual cycle, knowing when you're due on, knowing when you're due to ovulate, and, you know, maybe piecing together, okay, maybe last month I didn't manage to ovulate, which is why I felt so bad. And this month I'm sleeping okay and my anxiety is okay. I feel more resilient. Is that because you did ovulate that month and you did have that lovely calming effect of progesterone in your system? And for some women, histamine can also play a role. So particularly in the earlier stages of perimenopause, when estrogen is, the fluctuations tend to be more pronounced. And as part of the roller coaster, the estrogen highs can be really high. We can start to experience levels of estrogen three times higher than ever before in the earlier stages of perimenopause. And that can really start to stimulate histamine. And then histamine itself can be stimulating to your nervous system and then can contribute to night waking, anxiety, or racing mind in some women. Hot flushes and night sweats can also obviously contribute to waking us up in the night. And for some women, they'll say, the only reason I wake up in the night is because I get a hot sweat. And other women will say, well, I wake up anxious, I wake up wired, I also wake up hot. So they have a kind of mixture of things going on. And then for those women who are only waking up because they're hot, if we can get a handle, help them get their hot flushes under control, then they can stop waking at night. And in a roundabout way, blood sugar balance plays a big role in hot flushes and night sweats as well. But I'll come back to that. Restless leg syndrome can also contribute. Sleep apnea can contribute, you know, knowingly or not. And then there's something I talk about a lot called your life load. So a lot of women in their 40s are juggling more responsibilities than ever before. Careers at the peak of their career, or maybe switching careers. Teenagers, younger children, aging parents, financial pressures, relationships, relationship changes, relationship issues, running a household. Just being in perimenopause itself adds a lot of load to our life already. Even when you're doing the yoga, you're taking your magnesium, you're eating well, your nervous system still knows what you're carrying. So these things are very helpful. Of course they are. And we need to be including self-care throughout our week, of course, to help give our nervous system that support that it needs. But your nervous system does still know the load that we're carrying, and it knows what, you know, in what's going on physiologically in your body with the changing hormones. It knows about the aging parent that you're worried about, the teenager who's struggling that you're worrying about, the extra financial pressure, the extra workload, the pressure to perform at work, even though you're feeling differently now, the relationship challenges that you might be having. And sometimes despite doing all the right things, your sleep is reflecting the reality of that load. And that isn't a personal failure. That is literally physiology. So now let's talk about what actually helps. And I want to be careful here because I don't want this to become an episode full of sleep hacks, you know, just do this. And if you're not doing this, you're no good. And just do all these things and everything will be okay. But I want it to be something that's empowering and helpful for you to walk away with, because most women, I think, already know what they should be doing. They already have an idea that this isn't helpful. You know, I hear this all the time. I know I shouldn't be scrolling at night. I just can't help it. So they know these things. So instead, I'd encourage you to zoom out and look at the bigger picture. So firstly, stop viewing sleep as something that you need to force. I know that's easier said than done when sleep is, you know, when lack of sleep is causing you to feel horrible most days and maybe perform differently. But the more pressure we put on sleep, the more frustrated and anxious we obviously are going to become about it. And then the less likely we are to be able to sleep that night, and so on and so on. And I went through this myself about 8 or so years ago. And once I started to take the pressure off whether I slept or not, it really, really started to change that whole situation. Secondly, support your nervous system throughout the day, not just at bedtime. Now, this is big. This is what a lot of women tend to kind of miss, and I do this myself a lot some days. I've become much better at it, but there are still days I'm like, oops, you know, I've waited until 7 o'clock before I even take a breath, 7 p.m. And it's just too late in the day to start, you know, it's never too late to start supporting your nervous system in the day, but my nervous system needed that support from early. So sleep starts in the morning. It starts with, and this is all supportive of nervous system as well, it's morning daylight exposure. So ideally within about 30 minutes of waking, can we get outside into some sort of daylight, whether it's just stepping outside into the garden, whether we can go for a walk if we work from home and then come back and start the day. Regular meals. So we'll get onto that in a moment, but moments of calm throughout the day, little pockets of 3 minutes here and there of some deep breathing, even if it's just while you're sat at your desk. If you finish a meeting, finish a call, finish a bit of work, can you stand up, go for a little walk if you're working from home, around the house if you're in an office or outside, just take a little walk, even for a couple of minutes. If you're like me working from home, can you just stop what you're doing and just even just lie on the floor? I have a yoga mat laid out in front of my desk, and I just lay on it for a few minutes and take a few deep breaths and then sit back down again. Can we get some time in nature as much as we possibly can throughout the day, little pockets here and there? Movement, any movement, gentle movement, walking, dancing, yoga, qigong, just shaking your body out, shaking your limbs out, just move. Connection, making sure we are having conversations with people, ideally face to face where we can. You know, if we feel that we don't have time to say hello to somebody or have a chat with somebody in a shop, let's make time for it, because when we're feeling like we don't have time for that, we probably need to do that more. So making the time for those things, knowing that we're going to feel better and be more productive in our lives if we allow time for these things, because they are important. Laughter, making time to, like I said, connect, but also making time to have a chat, have a laugh, watch things that you find funny, listen to things that you find funny, speak to friends who you find funny. These things really matter. Your nervous system likes all these things. You know, this is supportive of your nervous system. And then lastly, I'd make sure you're eating enough. So particularly, this all comes back to the blood sugar issue, the blood sugar balance side of things, and the regular meals that I mentioned. So particularly protein-rich meals, protein-rich breakfast within an hour of waking where possible, and then balanced meals that support blood sugar stability from there on. So having that balanced meal in the morning, good sort of 25 to 30 grams of protein in your breakfast, like I say, within about an hour of waking up, ideally, to help balance those, get those blood sugar balancing hormones off to a really good start from first thing in the morning. And then 4-ish hours later, have the same at lunch. Four or so hours later, have the same at dinner. For most of us, the gap between lunch and dinner is a lot longer than that. I know for me it is. And so then putting in a protein-based snack in between lunch and dinner can just be really helpful to stop blood sugar from getting too low between that big gap. And then rather than having something sweet or sugary or carby, you're having something protein-rich with maybe some healthy fat that helps to stabilize blood sugar until you then have dinner. And then you have another protein-rich meal with plenty of vegetables and fiber and some good quality complex carbohydrate at dinner, because that's really helpful for supporting production of serotonin and therefore melatonin at night, and helping to keep your blood sugar balanced throughout the night and preventing you from waking up. So I do bang on about protein a lot, and there's previous episodes where I've talked about this in a lot more detail, but this is something that is really, really important. Blood sugar stability really does underlie so many different issues and symptoms as we move through perimenopause. So like I say, obviously we're talking about sleep now. In terms of sleep, it is so, so supportive. And all of the various different symptoms, you know, things like brain fog, that can be impacted by blood sugar instability, because one of the underlying causes of one of the drivers of brain fog can be what's known as insulin resistance. And if we're not eating in a blood sugar friendly way, we're more prone to insulin resistance than we already are anyway, as we move through perimenopause and menopause. So having protein rich meals 3 times a day with a snack in between lunch and dinner where needed is a really, really great way, or the way, to support good blood sugar stability. support insulin resistance, support the opposite of that, which is insulin sensitivity, and therefore help to improve things like brain fog, fatigue, energy dips, mood, hot flushes, night sweats, and of course, sleep. So it's really, really foundational. I talk about blood sugar a lot because it's so foundational. And if you haven't yet taken my free quiz, I do encourage you to do that because it's a really great way to, there's 36 questions, so it's very comprehensive. So it's a really good way after you've answered those questions to figure out, because the results will tell you which sort of area of health, the foundational area of health, you should be focusing on more now. So it could be, it might identify blood sugar, it might identify sleep habits or nervous system, stress management. It might identify liver or gut health. So it's a really great way to figure out what is your priority right now. And for a lot of us, once we put those questions in, blood sugar does come back as being one of the biggest things to start supporting now to help really move the needle and start improving your symptoms. So do take the quiz. I'll put the link in the show notes for that. And then you'll, as a result, when you get your results, you'll also get some really simple tips based on your results to help you get going. So finally, if you're finding that sleep has changed dramatically during perimenopause for you, please do recognize that hormones are very likely to be playing a role. It's not all in your head. It's not just because you're stressed. Yes, of course, stress plays a role, but there's more going on, you know, with the way hormones are changing and how that's impacting your entire system, your nervous system and your brain, then, you know, it's going to be more impactful at this stage in life. You're not weak. You're not doing anything wrong. You're not doing it all wrong. You're simply navigating a significant neuroendocrine transition that is perimenopause. So don't underestimate the impact it has, you know, on our system as a whole. So if there's one thing I'd love you to take away from today's episode, it's that sleep problems in perimenopause are usually much more than sleep. They're usually about much more than just sleep itself. And sleep issues are usually the symptom rather than the problem. So we tend to focus on, I can't sleep, that's, you know, sleep is the problem, rather than taking that step back and saying, well, my sleep issues are a symptom of the change in hormones. And there are, you know, so many different things you can be doing to support your hormones, which is the premise of my podcast, of my show. So there's plenty, you know, another 89 episodes to go back and listen to if you haven't already, in terms of how to support your body as it moves through this ride, because it is a long ride. And we really do want to know how to support it so that we can feel as good, as amazing as we can during this phase, because we can. You know, there's a lot of doom and gloom online about perimenopause, but we can support ourselves. And that's why I do this work. That's why this show exists. You know, if that wasn't the case, why would I kind of waste my time spreading this information? Because it is really, really important. It's important for us to know and important for us to act on. So, yeah, so sleep issues, they're influenced by your hormones, your nervous system, your blood sugar regulation, your stress resilience, your life circumstances, your life load, and your overall health status as well, nutrient deficiencies, all of those things. So if you're doing all the right things and you're still struggling, don't automatically assume that you're failing, that you're doing something wrong. Sometimes your body is simply asking for more support and more understanding. And understanding what's happening is really the first step towards changing it. So if you're listening to this and you're thinking, this is me, you don't have to figure this out all alone. Midlife Thrive is my membership. That is a wonderful resource that I wish every woman had access to before perimenopause even began, and somewhere to turn to throughout the journey itself. I've created it as a place to understand what's happening in your body, to learn what actually helps, and to feel supported every step of the way. That's what the membership is for. So I'll leave the link to it in the show notes if you'd like to learn more. And remember, if you haven't yet taken my free quiz, that's on my website as well. I'll leave the link in the show notes for that too. That's a really great place to start if you'd like a little bit more personalized insight into what your body might need right now. A really great tool for you. So thank you for listening, and I will see you in the next episode. And as ever, feel free to reach out with any comments, any questions, any feedback, any ideas of things that you'd like me to talk about, and any questions that you've got as well. I'll see you next time. Bye-bye. If you enjoyed this episode and you're wanting a bit more support, there's a few ways I can help you. You can take my free perimenopause quiz, join my Midlife Thrive membership, or work with me one-to-one. And I'll leave all the details in the show notes. And if this episode resonated, I'd love you to share it with someone who might need to hear it too. Thank you so much for being here. It really means a lot. And I'll see you in the next episode.